Hi everyone, this is Dr. Cheryl Selman and welcome to The Love Code. I'm so pleased you're with us today. This is a program that really has a great purpose, and the purpose is to uplift, inspire, transform, and heal you. How's that for a good goal and intention? So this is an opportunity to have conversations with wise, spiritually aligned, open-hearted people who have a mission in life, and the mission is to serve humanity and uplift humanity. So it's always my great pleasure to have these conversations with wonderful people, and I hope you will be joining me every week to inspire yourself, to keep yourself on the path and open to the immense possibilities that exist for all of us. I want to say before we jump into a fantastic conversation today that I have a website, and it's Dr. Cheryl Selman, and I will spell it for you. It's S-H-E-R-R-I-L-L-S-E-L-L-M-A-N. And the reason why I would like you to go and visit my website and opt in there, because I send all of the archive shows out to you. If you can't listen live, they'll come right to your inbox. And the other option is to go to my Facebook page, which is What Women Must Know. And What Women Must Know is the name of my other show on PRN. So if you go to either my website or like me on Facebook, you'll get both of my weekly programs. And, of course, you don't want to miss any of them because they are so inspiring, at least I think so. So, okay, I would like to take the opportunity to tell you about my guest today. We're going to be exploring a practical guide for realizing samadhi with Daniel Schmidt. And a little bit about Daniel. He has been practicing meditation and self-inquiry for over 20 years and has been teaching meditation for 10 years and draws on many different traditions in his teachings. Daniel is the creator of the award-winning film Inner Worlds, Outer Worlds, as well as the ongoing Samadhi series. Most recently, he released a series of guided meditations and teachings as a practical guide to realizing Samadhi. His approach combines self-inquiry with traditional forms of meditation so the participants have the opportunity to simultaneously realize their transcendent nature and to purify themselves of conditioned patterns. The pathless path is to realize an ever-deepening development process with the self structure, within the self structure, and to simultaneously realize what is always already beyond the self structure. Samadhi is when the world that is constantly changing merges or unites with the changeless. Wow. So, first of all, I want to welcome Daniel Schmidt to the show today. Hello, Daniel.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Well, you're so welcome, and I'm so happy you're here. I just want to tell everyone listening why I have you on the show. and that's because I was browsing through Amazon Prime looking for a good movie to watch or something inspiring, and there was Inner Worlds, Outer Worlds right there on my top line. And I didn't know what it was. It looked really interesting, and I just decided to play it. Well, I was just mesmerized. There are four episodes. I just went through all four in one night, and it was like, you know, putting me into samadhi. Daniel, you did your job. And then I found your samadhi series, which I said, gosh, this is so interesting. It kind of just on the same line, same kind of focus and theme as Inner Worlds, Outer Worlds. And then, of course, I saw when I got to the end that you created it. So I've been so drawn to what you're doing. And I really hope all of my listeners will find Inner Worlds, Outer Worlds, either it's on YouTube as well as Amazon Prime. It's the most phenomenal creation, Daniel, and that's why I had to find you. I tracked you down to find out who was this incredible man that made this profound it's profound. It's like it was channeled. The information is so amazing. And I found you. So I'm so happy that you are here and we're having this conversation today. So I just want
Wonderful.
To thank you for all the hard work you did to make that happen.
Thank you. Thank you. Thanks for reaching out and branching out your energy to find me.
I can get very determined when I want to. Let's start by having you share your journey. Well, I'm sure I don't know much about your background, so I'm fascinated to learn your story. I'm sure it's a very interesting story that got you to this place and also created a center called the Samadhi Center in, I guess it's Western Ontario. Is it like in the countryside of Ontario, Canada?
It is. It's sort of in the middle of nowhere. I don't know if listeners know Canada very well, but there's sort of a big space on the map kind of between Toronto and Ottawa, which are the two main cities. So we're kind of in there somewhere. And it's a beautiful pine forest setting here. So so I've been here for about 11 years now and running meditation retreats. And it's been a long journey. I was just a very, you know, I had a very normal kind of upbringing, kind of middle-class family. My parents were teachers. And I just was very much... just a person in the matrix, so to speak, you know, just pursuing money, not, you know, I was working in the television industry, which is a bit of a soul-sucking industry, but I didn't really have, you know, any kind of a spiritual path or calling, in my earlier part of my life, and it really wasn't until I experienced the suffering of, or the, kind of the pointlessness of pursuing all these things that we typically pursue outside of ourselves, and so a long story, but I basically something inside me didn't want to be doing what I was doing, and you could say my spirit or my soul really didn't want to be living the way I was in the city. So so I had a health crisis. I didn't listen to the warning signs that that it was giving me, and they were not so subtle warning signs. But sometimes you know if you don't listen to what's going on in your inner world, then sometimes you know your higher self will give you the hammer. So I required the hammer to really wake up out of what I was doing, and I ended up moving out into just a little. I basically got a little trailer house. My mortgage was like $200 a month, and I just moved out. I just got out of the system, and that was my way of just healing and going into my inner world, and I didn't have to worry about money too much because I was just, you know, I stripped everything down to its bare minimum, and that was for me sort of the beginning of a different life and a different direction.
So you kind of left society behind. And I guess you were forced to because of your health challenges and being unhappy in the industry you were working in. What happened when you took that time and went into yourself and, I guess, into more silence?
Yeah, so, the first thing was, I was, you know, I'd moved out of the city, left my business partner, left my other partner that I lived with. So I was just out in the middle of nowhere by myself. And the first thing I realized, you know, I bought a canoe. I had this whole kind of idealistic vision of how I would heal and kind of connect with nature and everything. And so the first thing I realized when I finally got my canoe onto the water was that my mind was completely insane still. You know, I brought all my stress, all my conditioned patterns out to this new place. Nature is a phenomenal mirror to reflect back the truth about yourself. So the first thing I realized was that, it wasn't actually my environment that was the problem. It was me. You know, it was my own conditioning in my mind that was the problem. So the first realization was that, I have to really take a good look at what's going on in my own mind and start to, go deep into whatever it is that I am, really look at what is it that I am, that, this self, this Dan structure that, I've inherited patterns from my family, from my teachers, so what is that thing? Why is it so unhappy? Why is it stressed out? And, at this level of agitation. Probably the thing that really turned my life around at that point was I had a friend who was into Vipassana meditation. He would do the SN Goenka 10-day retreats, and he had just come back from one, and he was glowing, like he was very alive, and he was telling me all about it, and I thought, okay, maybe this is something. I was kind of desperate. I didn't really know anything at that point about the mind, about meditation. I hadn't even read a book about it, but I saw this change in my friend. So I decided to go to do a 10-day retreat without even knowing really what it was. I just desperately wanted the off button for my mind, because at this point I had insomnia. I wasn't at peace at all. So that was probably the biggest thing. And the 10-day retreat, I went there, and they teach this ancient Vipassana meditation technique, and it was like suddenly it was like I was home. It was like I recognized it immediately as what I needed at that point in my life. So I had my first 10-day retreat. I had an awakening experience, I don't know if I should go into that at all, but it.
Oh yes, please do. I think we need to, that's so powerful to hear what happens when you lift the veil.
Yeah. So, at that point in my life, I was a real left brain person. My up to that point in my life, my path had been to go into philosophy in university, and then I went to law school. So, I was like totally left brain. And so there was, having a mystical experience wasn't even on my radar at all. I literally just wanted some relief from my mind. I just wanted the off button. I didn't care how it happened. But what happened at the retreat was, part of the technique, you're just coming into the present moment and allowing everything to be as it is. And I really took it seriously. I really, at that point, my feelings inside my body were intolerable. I had type 1 diabetes as part of my diagnosis, rheumatoid arthritis. My bones, in my deepest bones, I was experiencing this incredible pain and ache. So when I was doing this practice, it was excruciating. It pushed me to 100% of what I could tolerate in the moment. But I just kept surrendering and kept surrendering. At a certain point, I think it was after quite a few days, I think maybe after 7 or 8 days of just being, single pointed in applying myself to meditation, what happened was, something gave way, and it was like the energy and the pain and everything just sort of merged together with my consciousness. And it was like everything, all phenomena, all sensation just sort of woke up as my consciousness. And in that experience, I now have a way of talking about it as I call it a Savakalpa Samadhi experience. So it's a samadhi with a seed of form, basically. So there's still phenomena, and basically I merged with that phenomena, and it was unbelievable. It was like like an ecstatic sort of experience where, you know, literally everything I was experiencing was me. So I experienced myself. I remember walking along the path at the center and seeing other people and feeling my own consciousness inside of them. And I felt the just energetically, like the chakras were open. So I felt, felt like the power of the universe moving through me. And yet it was consciousness. It was my own aliveness or my own awareness. The thing about Savakalpa Samadhi is that it's not the final samadhi where one recognizes their true nature. So I was at this point in my journey, you know, I was completely identified with my self structure. So, you know, so the Dan character that was having this experience, you know, I believed I was that. I thought at that point I was enlightened, or I was like the Buddha or Jesus walking around in this state, and I was fully 100% identified with that. So you can imagine, having had quite a bit of suffering up to that point, and then having this incredible experience, which at that point I believed, you know, this is it. This is what I've always wanted. This is the state I want to be in forever. You can imagine the amount of identification with that. I wasn't at all prepared for this, and of course it was just a state of samadhi. It wasn't a permanent stage of samadhi. So I lost it just as quickly as I got it, and the experience of losing it was, you know, it was going from being all that is to being basically nothing, to being this little insect-like creature again. And so I felt the profound loss of that state as well, and literally wanted to kill myself at that point. Like I couldn't tolerate it, and it's because my self structure was just not prepared, and I didn't understand that in order to encompass these higher states, we need to be at a point in our journey where we can let them come and go, and without any attachment to them. So that was my first big lesson, and it wasn't until much later that I was able to really understand and have a true samadhi experience where I realized, you know, my own, the emptiness of the self structure, basically, and I realized what samadhi actually is what doesn't come and go. It's actually our awareness that is ever present, you know. So the awareness that was in that first experience, it wasn't aware of itself as all that is. It was still sort of asleep, and the ego construct was really what was driving my life and driving the show at that point. So the real samadhi experience, the Nirvikalpa Samadhi, my first experience of that was About, I'd say, maybe 13 years later, when I was at a Zen center, and again, I was in a similar sort of situation, and I talk about conditions of no escape, where, you know, we put ourselves in these crazy sort of conditions of you know, doing these practices, and you know, the Zen center was even more extreme, because you have to sit very rigidly still, and it was just a more intense period of practice. And at this time, I'd been doing a lot of self-inquiry, you know, they, part of their tradition, they teach the Heart Sutra as well. So a lot of the non-dual teachings were being taught at this retreat, and I was really, really struggling. Like, I was really experiencing, again, a lot of pain, and you know, my meditation practice was pushing me to about 100% of what I could handle again. And I remember going to my teacher there, and he said, you know, you can just drop the struggle, just recognize who is struggling. And then, of course, I was struggling to drop the struggle, and it, and it just became this absurd, you know, it got to a point where I had to either get out of there or somehow find out how to surrender. And I realized at a certain point I couldn't do anything. I couldn't make samadhi happen. The ego construct or the Dan structure or any technique, anything that I can do was futile. And I gave up, basically. I completely gave up, but I stayed on the cushion, and I just surrendered. I basically, you know, the self construct just realized that it had failed. There's nothing it could do, and it was in that failure, that surrender, that my awareness was still there. It had always been there, but it's like it woke up. I realized that, you know, I'm not that self structure. I'm not you know, this activity of doing. And there was a profound sort of stillness, but it wasn't the stillness that you can make happen. It was just almost like the stillness recognizes itself. And it literally is like a waking up, and that stillness is, you know, it's everything. It's the consciousness that permeates this entire world. It's, you know, it's been called many things in many different traditions, you know, that Krishna consciousness or Brahman or Buddha nature, you know, so that for me, you know, that's what I refer to as nirvikalpa samadhi. So in that experience, there was a cessation of the Dan activity, the Dan structure, so it literally stopped. Like there was a stillness and nothingness. There was no subjective phenomena. In that experience, you know, it wasn't even an experience because there's no experiencer. But yet, there's this something that can't be said, which is awareness itself. In the ancient teachings, they talk about, you know, the gross, subtle, and causal levels. So this would be the causal, the formless level of our being, which we experience every night. We don't experience it, but we go into it in deep sleep. So there, in deep sleep, there's no phenomena. Nirvikalpa samadhi is basically identical to deep sleep. There's nothing that can be described, except the difference is the awareness is present, or the I am. is present. So there's a sense of that the eternal awareness.
You know, this is what all spiritual traditions talk about, as you mentioned. It does, you know, in different ways, different languaging, throughout time.
Mm-hmm.
Throughout time, this is the eternal truth that all spiritual traditions are pointing towards, which is what our real purpose here is to realize at some point in our many lives, right? At some point. How did that change you? And do you still, are you still in that place in your life now? Does it come and go? What's the experience for you?
So that's a good question. So, like, I have to answer a question like that, you know, kind of from the absolute and from the relative simultaneously. So I'll do both. So from the absolute perspective, you know, what I am as absolute awareness, that doesn't change. There's nothing to change. There's no quality to it, and you know, there's nothing that evolves or can be. There's no development process that happens with that pure awareness. So from that perspective, you know, nothing changes. Absolutely nothing changes. You don't gain anything. You don't lose anything, you know, but within the self structure, you know, like I use the term awakening and enlightenment differently. So you know, the awakening is the awakening of that primordial awareness, which is eternal and changeless. But enlightenment to me is this development process that happens within the self structure that is an unfolding through time. So somehow, you know, what we are as a human being, we're this eternal awareness, but it's embedded, or, you know, it's like in the Upanishads, they talk about the sheaths of the soul, or the sheaths of the self structure. And so there are many levels, many layers of mind that sort of inspiral or encase, you know, or, you know, it's like the awareness gets caught in the illusion of self. And so the self structure and the soul are you know, they're changing and developing through time. And So that, for me, you know, there's a lot that kicks into gear when you have an awakening experience. From my perspective, what's happening is, you know, the enlightenment process or development process becomes accelerated. So we, you know, there's sort of two aspects to that. We go into the existing self structure and kind of purify it of our conditioned patterns. So we, you know, we go into our the conditioning that we've inherited from society and our biological conditioning, and we learn to not be continuously reacting to those preferences, which are, you know, they're just like little programs of craving and aversion that, you know, it's just the response to stimulus that we've inherited, and that response to stimulus is sublimated to all different levels of our life. So we're going after money, we're going after relationships, we're going after, you know, things that will boost our self-esteem. All that stuff is tied into that conditioning, you know, and on the deepest root level, it's just pure response to stimulus. It's just, you know, wanting what gives us pleasure on the deepest sensory level and avoiding pain at that same level. So that, you know, so that purification process, you know, is something that is really important. Once we've had an awakening experience, you know, almost everybody who awakens will they get drawn back into their conditioned patterns, and that was the case for me as well. You know, after about 2 weeks, I had a nice 2 week run where I was resting in awareness, but then bit by bit my conditioned patterns came back. So, you know, this purification process, you know, purifying the sankharas that they talk about in the Buddhist condition, which are these patterns, is totally necessary if you want to have a purified vessel like your human body to house that awakened consciousness in a more permanent way. So so that is an ongoing process. And then you know, as we free our energy from those conditioned patterns, that energy becomes free to explore other aspects of the self structure, like you could say the higher self, which in these ancient teachings they speak about that as well. So you know, as human beings, like we're mostly existing in our society on the mental and physical level, but we also have, you know, in the Upanishads they talk about the energetic level, the pranic level, and then there's the higher mind or insight level, which is, you know, you could call it the archetypal realm or higher intellect level. That is, it's almost like the template level for our lives. And then there, beyond that, there's the causal level, and which I described a little bit, which is you know, it's the realization of you know, in the yogic traditions when they talk about Sat Chit Ananda, which is you know, the bliss of the truth or the bliss of emptiness. That is the you know, sort of the formless or causeless level of our self. So so as we become free of these old conditioned patterns, this energy, it's, you know, the energy, if you think about you know, lightning or you know, any energy is just like branching patterns, you know. So it's, you think about a human brain, you know, it's just made of these branching patterns, and these higher levels of mind are just levels of energy that are branching and exploring, you know, just like higher levels of mind. And so, you know, to me that is another big part of the development process, that so we're simultaneously becoming free of conditioning, and we're simultaneously creating new conditioning and subtler conditioning to experience all these aspects of human existence that we may not even have known existed. You know, a lot of this stuff before I was meditating, I had no idea what was even possible. And you know, now I know that I don't know. You know, I know there's so much in the unfolding of this development process. Like I'm you know, I've been blown away many times. You know, I've had different teachers, and they've connected me with things that you know, were not even on my radar at all, and aspects of myself and aspects of existence that are you know, just totally new. So you know, I feel, you know, that the best sort of orientation or attitude to have to the path, you know, is one of beginner's mind, you know, and really, really accepting that, you know, the limited mind, the limited me, doesn't know. It can't know. It's actually the obstacle to knowing, or, you know, or to not even to knowing, but, you know, to the plugging in to these higher levels of mind. You know, it's like it has to surrender the limited self has to surrender its energy in order to allow it to plug into these higher levels of mind and self.
This has been such a tremendous and profound journey for you, Jan. What do you how do you think you're different? I mean, in the way that you live your life now, as from before you had these experiences.
Yeah, you know, in some ways, like nothing changes. You know, like that's the interesting thing. Like a lot of teachers will talk about how, you know, like before enlightenment, chop wood, carry water. After enlightenment, chop wood, carry water. You know, so you know, you still do all the same things, but you know, all the things that are happening within the self structure are still happening. But you know, a lot of my life is, you know, like if I look what's happening on a day to day level, you know, I'm doing a lot of things that are, you know, like doing meditation retreats and doing writing, working on films. Like a lot of it is just sort of, you know, I think the way I would describe it is like if I look at myself 20 years ago, you know, there were little seeds of things that I, you know, I felt, you know, my soul wanted to be doing, and yet I would never do them. You know, like playing piano, I would never be doing the things that I love that actually nourished my spirit, and it's because my self structure was too busy, you know, doing all the stuff that it wanted to do, and you know, watching movies or, you know, worrying about this or that, or, you know, just the patterns that we fall into. So I would say, you know, now, like the biggest shift for me is, you know, I'm not fighting myself nearly as much. Like I'm you know, my default is to do meditation rather than to try and avoid meditation. And my default is more to just do, you know, just allow myself to do the things that I'm meant to be doing. And you know, I think, you know, the only measure on the path really is when you look back at your life, you know, are you actually suffering less in your life than you were, you know, previously? And so when I look at when I started meditation and, you know, and now, like the amount of suffering that I have in my life is less, you know, and I think hopefully I generate less suffering for people around me as well, because, you know, I was a pretty, you know, I had a very strong ego, and I still do. I still, you know, my partner Tanya tells me that, you know, my ego construct is like, it really is a blessing and a curse. You know, the mind is you know, able to work with all these different things and you know, talk about different aspects of spirituality and make all these connections, but it's also always simultaneously creating a facsimile of the truth of the, you know, of, you know, it's basically creating an awakened self structure all the time. So one has to be very vigilant that you know, you don't create some sort of spiritual persona and you know, create the prison all over again. And I've done that at many points, and you know, so I believe you, like, you're never beyond anything on this path. You're never beyond anything.
When you talked about purifying the patterns, you know, many of the teachers talk about the need for purification. when you're on a path of connecting to your real self. What do you suggest and offer people as strategies to help purify? I mean, and what is it that we're purifying so we can define what that which is being purified is?
Yeah, well, it's very strange because it's you. Like, you're really purifying yourself of yourself. You know, it's a very strange thing that we're doing in meditation. So, you know, and even at a certain point, you know, all these techniques that we have in meditation, at a certain point, even the technique itself is, you know, every technique is conditioned, right? Because it's something that we learn and we have it. We have it in our mind and within our self structure. So even the technique itself at a certain point has to be dropped. So, you know, like, to answer your question, like, the purifying, to me, like, what's happening in meditation, you know, at the Samadhi Center, like, we usually start out with techniques at a retreat. So we'll use a technique like observing the natural breath. And what happens is, you know, in Buddhism, they talk about jhana, the jhanas, or states of meditative absorption. So, you know, the technique almost is irrelevant at a certain point. Like, we always start out with a technique that is, you know, like, that makes sense, basically. Like, you're dealing with something that is actually real in the present moment. So the breath is a great example. But you could be observing the inner energy of the chakras, or you could be, there's a million techniques out there. You could be doing the Vipassana body scan technique, or you could be, there are different techniques where you note, mental phenomena. You label mental phenomena. So it doesn't matter which one of these techniques. One of our teachers is really into, all different techniques for different situations. And but the stripping away happens when you take one technique and you really go deep with it. So if you start to observe the natural breath, you start to come face to face with the hindrances. You know, so the hindrances are, you know, the mind will start generating thoughts, so you have to start to make an effort to be in the present moment, or other hindrances will come, like tiredness or agitation and these different things. And so when we really we make an effort to just be with the meditation object, we start to pull energy out of these patterns, and these patterns, they call them sankharas, which are just habit patterns of the mind, and these sankharas will start to come up to the surface as we're meditating, and it's just resistance. That's all it is. It's just the wiring that is inside of a human being needs to be running. It needs to be active in order for the self structure to exist. So when we're just sitting with our meditation object, we're just sitting with the breath, you know, we're not flowing energy into the old conditioned pattern, and it starts to get agitated. It starts to feel like, literally, like, if you sit, for 2 hours or 3 hours without moving, your self structure starts to feel like it's dying. And so these sankharas that will come up will try and move you out of your meditation. They'll try and move you off the cushion, and it generates aversion within deep part of your being. So it'll try and interrupt your meditation, And the meditation, you know, staying with the meditation object, really, you know, if it's the breath, like you're not really actually doing anything in the meditation. You're not, there's no actual activity happening. What you're really doing is just being with what is in the moment. And then, you know, these sankharas start to come up, and you're really just recognizing the craziness that's already happening within the mind. And you just let it all come up to the surface. You let it arise and pass away. Whatever phenomena is there, you know, it's authentically there in the moment. You just let it all arise and pass away. And as we do that, there are many levels of absorption, these jhanas that are talked about in Buddhism. And jhana just means, it's the same word as Zen in Zen Buddhism, actually, or in the yogic tradition, it's dhyana. And, every level of jhana or a level of absorption that happens in meditation, there's a simultaneous sort of dropping away of activity of the mind, and there's an energy gets released as well. So there's a subjective experience of greater presence or concentration and less mind activity at every level. And so the first, to get through to the first jhana, we move through these typical hindrances that arise in meditation. And we have to be very persistent, and we don't make it happen. It just sort of happens as we just let go of our activity. We let go of any self or any doing that is happening in the meditation.
So I would imagine what you are describing from your experience and your studies is the process that is being recognized when all these studies are being done, the functional brain scans are being done, and seeing how the brain is altered, how people have less anxiety, improved sleep. When we're less agitated, when we're more at peace, when we're literally rewiring our brain through these practices of just being and observing, we actually are then experiencing the manifestations of a greater balance, more life energy flowing through us, just the ability to be more present and ultimately happy.
Yes. Yeah, our happiness that comes through, through meditation is not contingent on anything. You know, it's mm-hmm. just, it's you know, when the energy that is inside of us is just flowing freely, it's not engaged in a pattern, you know, because these self patterns are always, they're always trying to get something, they're always trying to get more, you know, and it's always projected outside of ourselves. So that self structure, it is nothing but a series of preferences, you know, wanting one thing or another, and these behaviors of trying to get them. So when all of that stops, you know, when that whole system of trying to get more stops, and that energy is just present and just free, you know, you're just being in the moment, and that is happiness. That's bliss. That's the transcendent bliss that is spoken about in all these traditions, and it has no purpose. It has no object other than just to be what it is. Mm-hmm. And so there's nothing to attain. There's no there are no conditions for that that need to be fulfilled.
Yeah, you don't have to purchase something, or you don't have to find the right person, or you don't have to have the perfect meal to be happy.
Yeah.
It's just
yeah.
your nature.
Yeah, it's just it's exactly true. It's our true nature is just that happiness. And you know, when you see a little kid, you know, who's really, really happy, you know, they're not, you know, sometimes, like, you know, the simplest things can just be joyful. And so it's not a, you know, it's not anything very profound in that sense, but it is profound because it's, you know, when we can let go of this egoic agenda, then we receive everything, and it's always already there, but it's like we just have to stop, you know, we have to stop grasping and experience this moment differently, just experience this moment in a way that is not being mediated by this self structure.
You know, I have so many questions, and some of them will take us really deep, and I don't think we really have enough time. So I think maybe I'll just switch the conversation to the documentary you made. So the inner worlds, outer worlds, and as I said earlier in the introduction, I just highly recommend people watch this four-part documentary and just take it in, just absorb it. There's so much information there. The mind can't totally comprehend what is being shared, but I think you get it on other levels, and it's just so beautifully done. So do you want to just talk a little bit? We don't have a lot of time left, Dan, so maybe just a little bit about how this came about to create this very, I mean, it's not just profound, but the amount of work that went into bringing all these pieces of wisdom from all these traditions together in a coherent way was amazing to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, it's the whole filmmaking process for me is very mysterious. Like I started out in the television industry and making sort of cookie cutter TV shows, and what's happened now is, you know, it's the exact opposite of that. It is very mysterious how it works, and I, you know, with these films, I just start working, and, you know, with that film in particular, like I had hours and hours and hours of stuff that I created, and I threw out probably five films during the creation of it, and it's just purely exploration and being willing to explore something and then let it go. And you know, the whole thing really started as a PowerPoint that I was creating for a little meditation class that I was doing, and then it just kept growing. There was an energy around it, and people were responding to it, and it just kept growing. And you know, to me, it is very mysterious. Like when I started this process, you know, I felt like I'd had some insights in my practice, and I wanted to share them. But then as I started you know, really exploring and researching and connecting with all these different traditions, it just got more and more mysterious. And I realized, you know, it was like this ever deepening rabbit hole that I was going down. And it just seems now like the more I do these films, the more there is to make a film about. And it's not, you know, I don't feel like there will be ever any end to it, you know. But for me personally, on my own journey, like to be in the flow of that, to allow that to come through, is, you know, there's no place I would rather be. It's like being in the cathedral. It's like being in, you know, the place where I can work with sound and light, and it's, you know, it is truly an exploration for me. You know, I don't sit down with the stuff and have any sense that I have something to teach or you know, something that I want to convey. I feel like I'm, you know, I'm connecting to what these great teachers have all connected to, and you know, there are countless beings who have embodied these teachings much better than I have or ever will, and it's all coming from the same source. You know, in terms of my own path, it is what connects my inner world with the outer world. You know, literally, the film is a bridge for me to bridge those two worlds.
Well, I cannot recommend it highly enough, and it's wonderful that it's found its way onto Amazon Prime and to YouTube. I mean, you can just go into YouTube and do a search for Inner Worlds, Outer Worlds, and you'll find all the four parts of that amazing documentary you made. So I'm encouraging everybody to check it out. I think everyone will be profoundly transformed, if not healed, by watching what you've created. So so grateful to you for doing that. And before we kind of come to the end, we only have a couple more minutes, but can you just share a little bit about the Samadhi Center? People want to know more about it and what you
do there. Sure. So the Samadhi Center is really a place to do meditation and self-inquiry. And I see meditation and self-inquiry as really one thing, you know, part of one continuum, basically. So so the way I teach it at the center is, you know, usually starting out with techniques that will take you into less and less doing, like taking you to your stillness, to the point where you hopefully will have an opportunity for awareness to awaken to itself. And you know, so it's just a container. I'm basically doing what the Vipassana centers are doing, the Zen centers, or you know, the yoga ashrams. It's all sort of the same kind of techniques, but I just have a very eclectic approach, and I don't really subscribe to any one particular tradition. And so people can come for a weekend retreat for 10 days. A 10-day retreat is a great way to really, you know, if you really want to get inside your conditioning and really get grounded in a meditation practice, it can be a great way to do it.
So let me just spell Samadhi for people who may not know how it's spelled. It's S-A-M-A-D-H-I. .ca for Canada, because Stan lives in Canada. So it's samadhi.ca, the website. And if you want to learn more, and just have a look. It's a beautiful center. Did you create that? Did you design that?
Sort of, yeah. It was built about 3 years ago. So, yeah, and it was sort of designed specifically for meditation. And we do a lot of sound stuff there as well, like meditation with sound. If you go to the site, you'll see images of large gongs and things there. So a lot of these sound tools are fantastic for connecting people with their inner world and their inner energy, especially if they've never really felt it before. So.
Well, you've created some amazing things, and that creative energy just keeps flowing through you. So I'm excited to see what comes next. And I just want to thank you for the wonderful work you've been doing and for your time today and helping to keep us all inspired and connected to our inner world. So thank you, Dan Schmidt.
Thank you for the opportunity.
It's been a great conversation, and to everyone listening, thank you. This wonderful conversation has been with Daniel Schmidt, who has created a beautiful documentary, Inner Worlds, Outer Worlds, for free on YouTube or Amazon Prime. It's probably in other places, but those are the two easily accessed. And Daniel, just thank you so much for everything you've been doing. It's been a pleasure talking with you today.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
And to all of you listening, thank you for joining me today. And until we meet again next week, may your week be filled with love, peace, and happiness. Bye for now.